I want to first welcome everybody to Monday's COVID-19 update, and I was delighted to receive this mask from the Human Development Center in Warren, and they have made this mask among many others, and these masks actually can be purchased at the Blue Umbrella, which is, I believe, on Main Street here in Little Rock. It's the Blue Umbrella, so I encourage you all to take a look at that. It has some beautiful masks there if anybody is in that market. And of course, it supports our good friends at the Human Development Center. Today, of course, is the first day of school, so I'm delighted to have Secretary Johnny Key here, who was at a school earlier today. And then, of course, Secretary Jose Romero of the Department of Health. And then as a guest today, I've asked Dr. Tina Ipe to join us from UAMS. She is the Director of Transfusion Medicine, that I just anticipated there could be a question along that line, so I wanted to have someone with a little more expertise than me addressing that question. Today, of course, as I said, is the first day of school, and I was just reflecting back that 2 weeks ago, I challenged everybody in Arkansas, we've got 2 weeks before school starts, reduce the positivity rate, let's reduce the number of cases out there. And I just want to thank the parents, I want to thank the community leaders and everybody for taking individual responsibility and, in fact, reducing those numbers over the last 2 weeks. And I particularly today want to say thank you to our teachers, our staff members, all of those educators that have worked hard being ready for today, and the love that they have for the children who need the schooling this year. And so with that, let's first, since this is Monday, review the weekend. Friday, we had that large bump, which was a spike of 887 cases. Since then, we got down to the levels that we wanted. Saturday, we had an increase of 547 cases. And then Sunday, we had an increase of 375 cases. So those were good numbers over the weekend with very robust testing, with over 6,200 tests on Saturday and almost 6,000 tests on Sunday. Today, we have an increase of 320 cases, and so that continues to be going the right direction for us. And that brings our total cumulative cases in Arkansas to 56,894. And so that was an increase of 320 cases. I'll ask Dr. Romero to go through the top counties as well as some other information that he has. In terms of hospitalizations, that's an additional good news in the sense that we had a reduction of 34 from the hospitals, and so it's down to 466 that are hospitalized. We have 9 additional deaths. That brings us to 696. In terms of testing, we had for the weekend, it was good. It was 4,629 tests were performed, and that leaves us with an active number of cases of 5,509. And let's go through the flow here. As you can see, it speaks for itself where our last bar graph is down at a lower level. And the next one shows the trend. And I was very worried when we had that one spike up on Friday. But as you can see, that's just going to happen from time to time. We're going to have a day of a high spike like that. So it's the trend that we pay attention to. And the trend is going in the right direction, but obviously we want it to go lower than where it is right now. And next, I want to show this. I don't do it all the time. And this shows the trend from daily average new cases by week. And so you can see, 2 weeks ago at the top mark, and then we've had that decrease each week since then leading up to today. Now the last one, the week's not complete, so I'm not ready to count that yet, but you can still see the last 2-3 weeks what's happened, and we want to be able to maintain that. The number of active cases, again, it shows it better than a number. That is down. That's good. And then hospitalized is down. We want to hopefully continue that and see people get well as they have to go in the hospital. We want them to get out and recover. The 7-day rolling average of percent positive, and this is important to emphasize because we've always, here is the 10% level, and you can see that we were above that for some time in terms of average, and then the 7-day rolling average brings us down to below 10% comfortably, and we're the last week, I believe it was 8.2%. Some of those numbers will fill up as we get more results in, but we like the direction that we're going. And this just brings you up to date on the cumulative test results. We are testing robustly in Arkansas. I'm satisfied with that. We're going to get close to the goals that we set, but we want, as Dr. Romero and I were talking, people have to want to go in and get a test. They either have to be a need, they have to be symptomatic, or they have to be traveling, or they simply say, I'm worried and I need to go get a test. We finished the mass testing last month in our prisons. We've made some adjustments, but school is starting. That could increase the need for testing, but part of this is the ability to get the test done, and part of it is to make sure that there is people wanting to go in and get the test. And then if you'll go... This is something we do from time to time. I challenged Dr. Romero and the Department of Health and Stephanie Williams to pick a date of our cases, and let's dig a little bit deeper as to how we did our tracing and what we learned from that. And so it was August 10th. They picked a day, maybe that was smart on their part, that it was low cases of 383. But August 10th, we had 383 cases. The top five counties then, you can see Pulaski, Sebastian, Carroll. And this is how it, go back, divides along the public health regions numerically as to in each region where they were. Now you notice down at the bottom, 47 cases with counties not identified. Everything about our data is information that we get from whoever is getting tested. And so when we can't identify the counties, that's a little bit of a challenge. And then if you go to the next slide, it breaks down a little bit different, that 383 cases, they were all assigned to the nurse investigator who makes the initial call, and then they are assigned to a contact tracer. And here, 314, or 82%, of the cases were assigned to contact on the same day. And then of those, 69, as you can see, were not assigned due to missing contact information. Again, information. And then after they're investigated by the nurse investigator, they go to contact tracing, and 188 were followed up on contact tracing. Well, what happened to the rest of them? 126 were not required to have contact tracing because they're a nursing home or a congregate setting. And then the last bit of information, the average time to complete the case investigation was 1.63 days, which was through the initial contact by the nurse investigator. And then we obviously want to increase that, but that's not too bad. If you go to the next one, on the contact tracing side, it's of 188 contact tracing calls, it led to 413 contacts identified that has to be followed up on, 2.2 contacts identified per case, and that is 23 hours to complete our contact tracing. It's understandable with the calls, with the feedback, with waiting on somebody to respond to make those contacts, but the quicker we can make that and the quicker the response we get, then the safer we all are. And that brings us to the reminders to provide complete information, especially phone number and email address. asymptomatic cases can spread the virus. I believe the doctor is going to talk about that and wear a face covering, just some reminders. And with that, let me turn it over to Dr. Romero for his report, and then we're going to follow it up with our good doctor that will talk about plasma, and then Secretary Keith.
Thank you, Governor. So I'll add a little bit of a fine point to some of the numbers that were presented by the governor. So as mentioned, there were 320 new cases in the last 24 hours. 309 occurred in the community, and 11 were correctional cases. Our total cases for the state are now 56,894. In addition to a reduction in the number of individuals hospitalized, we had two fewer individuals requiring ventilation, so we're now at 106. Regarding the deaths that were discussed previously, one of these was a delayed report from last month. We're working to try to get those reports to us faster, and there was no clustering. That is, we saw no outbreaks in nursing homes or in correctional facilities. To date, we've added 438 more individuals to our list of recovered, bringing us now to 50,689. Testing, as mentioned, we've done solid testing for the last day. 1,409 specimens were processed by the health department, 3,020 by commercial laboratories, and 20 from UAMS. With counties, again, we're seeing the same as we are with the number of cases. There's a decrease in the number of counties over 20 cases per county. We are now only at 3, with Pulaski still being the number one county at 46, Faulkner at 36, and Point Set at 23. I'd like to point out, based on the slides that the governor showed, that as you could see, one-third of all of the positive cases on that particular day, that is August 10th, were asymptomatic. That is, they had no symptoms whatsoever. They presented for testing, and we found them to be positive. And what that means for us as the public is that an asymptomatic individual can place you at risk for acquisition of COVID. It's very important that we adhere to the mask mandate, that no matter where you are, if you're in public, you should always use a mask, not just for because you're going to protect someone else. Remember, this protects those around you more than you yourself. I also want to point out that we want to continue robust testing throughout the state. We're starting to see a little bit of a slowdown. In order for our numbers to be predictive and to use for modeling into the future, and that is for schools, to making decisions, we need to have robust testing in our community. I know we're all tired of hearing me get up here every day and say, you've got to test, but unfortunately, that's the truth. The other thing I want to leave you with is that the health departments, your local health units, will test any and all comers. So you do not have to have symptoms, you do not have to have an exposure, nor do you have to have travel to an area where COVID is endemic. So we are open, we want to test, and we want to encourage you to come and be tested. So I'll stop there and pass it on to Dr. Ipe, I believe, for her comments on convalescent plasma.
Thank you so much. I have to admit that I'm a little bit nervous, but I want to thank Governor Hutchinson as well as Dr. Romero and ADH for allowing me to present. I wanted to focus on the Arkansas Initiative. The Arkansas Initiative was primarily a mechanism for Arkansans to take care of other Arkansans. You know, when our state first dealt with COVID-19, we really had to quickly determine how to respond. And convalescent plasma was a therapy that we could easily bring on board to the state of Arkansas. And through this mechanism, we have done such a fabulous job in terms of Arkansans caring for other Arkansans that we have been able to provide 2 units of convalescent plasma for every hospitalized patient, and that is incredible. So it is my hope that we can continue to provide convalescent plasma for the state, especially when we need to gather additional data on how efficacious convalescent plasma is for patients receiving it. Thank you.
Good afternoon. As the governor stated, today is the first day of school all over Arkansas. And so far today, the reports that we've been receiving have been very positive. We continue to get feedback from around the state about the challenges and the solutions that are being implemented. Today, I had the privilege of being at the Morrilton Primary School in South Conway County School District. Mrs. Sharon Wilson is the principal there, Sean Halbrook, the superintendent, and what I saw there was the result of a lot of great preparation. Mrs. Stoball, the librarian, when I went into the library, she told me all the things they'd been doing to prepare for technology, to prepare for their facilities, and she said, "We've been planning on this since March." And you could tell that because the students were already getting into their routine. These are pre-K, kindergarten, first grade students, and you could tell in the classrooms they were already engaged in learning because in primary school you typically go begin the lunch process a lot earlier in the day. So about 10:30, we started seeing children going to lunch. The cafeteria was exactly as you would want to see it, Governor. We had tables that were 8 feet long. You had a student on one end of that table and a student on the other end of that table. They had changed all of their procedures as far as how they serve their meals. They changed their procedures of how they exit the cafeteria, all with the idea of following the guidelines. And that's what I want to close my remarks with. We must follow the guidelines. If we want to have a successful school year, it starts from when we get on the bus until we leave in the afternoon. And where we go after that and what we do will constitute whether we have a successful school year. And to that end, Dr. Romero did convey to me that today in his commute, he pulled up beside a school bus and noticed the bus driver was not wearing a mask. So I would just encourage everyone, if we want to make this work, we have to follow the guidelines. Please wear your mask. Please practice with your students on social distancing. Adhere to all the precautions. And we will move through this very unusual school year, but we will do so successfully. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Johnny. And that's a good admonition in terms of we're going the right direction and reducing the number of new cases. But where will we be 2 weeks from now? We've got to make sure that we all do all that we can to make sure we stay in school, that we support our students, that are doing everything that they can to complete their education in a safe way and to support our teachers as well. And then with that, I did want to follow up with Dr. Ipe. The reason I asked her to be here, of course, was yesterday's comment and announcement by the president with the FDA commissioner of emergency use authorization for the blood plasma. As Dr. Ipe indicated, we're ahead of the curve here in Arkansas. And this really reminds me going back months ago with UAMS taking the lead in this. It was novel, it was new, but it has certainly been beneficial for our state. With that, we'll take any questions.
I guess Secretary Key, has there been any connectivity issues? Because obviously there's a lot more people on the interwebs than there normally is.
We have not received any reports yet, as far as any difficulties with connectivity or students. You know, there have been some delays in just getting devices. We continue to hear reports of that, whether that be the hotspots or the actual Chromebooks, whatever device has been chosen. Delays until September, but we've talked about those supply chain issues before.
Commissioner, if you have a question, As far as the access to internet, I know that there have been a lot of grants and money thrown at different communities over the last couple of weeks to make sure that everybody has some type of broadband access. Do you have a percentage at all of just how many Arkansas students have access to it? Are you at 100%? Is every student able to virtually learn if that's the route they ended up having to take or chose to take?
Well, we continue to have the survey open where we're asking districts to respond. Districts, superintendents understand their local context, what's available, and what may have become available over the last few weeks. I know the conversations with local providers, as well as the money the governor has dedicated from the GEAR funding to provide hotspots through the three major wireless carriers. Those have all been very helpful. But to say we're at a certain level, certain percentage, I don't have that data, but it's something we continue to monitor.
Follow-up question, if I may. I know that a school district in Cleveland County had to delay opening school.
Yes.
Just a couple days ago, the Ross School District said three schools were affected. Do you foresee more and more districts either having to delay it, choose to go remote only? What are we going to look like here in a couple of weeks as we keep seeing more districts dealing with COVID?
Well, I think the districts that we have seen and heard from in the last couple of days, Woodlawn being the one I think you're referring to in Cleveland County, they had one positive case, but from that one positive, they had six close contacts, and it was isolated in their food service area. Well, if your food service area is has a challenge, then that becomes a challenge for the whole school. But they are looking at getting subs so that they can delay the start until Wednesday, and the superintendent last report said that they were planning on having staff and students on site on Wednesday. The other one that came up yesterday was KIPP, KIPP Delta, the Early Learning Academy. They had one positive case, but then 26 close contacts. But again, best we can tell, they were not following the correct precautions, and this is the thing that happened. So it's an admonition to everyone. Say, we can do this, but we have to be very diligent about these. So in their case, that's the only campus that was affected, and they are working with us and with the health department to prepare a plan going forward in order to get things rolling again. Do I expect we'll see more of this? Yes. But if it's only one positive here and there, and we can control it, that's what we want to do. That's why we put the precautions in place. So districts can handle this and be successful at it.
Thank you, Johnny. And let me add on the wireless. We have the temporary solution, which is the $20 million we put in the wireless access points. And then long-term, though, is where we are trying to build high-speed broadband capacity in our rural areas. That's the most recently that the legislature devoted $100 million of CARES Act funding for. That takes time to deploy, but you can see that we're moving aggressively as a state to fill in those holes. We recognize that there can be inequities in education if you don't have that capacity for online education. And it also emphasizes why it is so important. Nothing beats the in-classroom instruction that we're trying to accomplish.
I guess numbers sort of trending in the right direction here, and I know a lot of people would ask, you know, where are the goalposts at? Is it a certain number of, you know, active cases? Is it a certain number of hospitalizations? Society kind of wants a goal to shoot for, I would ask.
Well, as low as you can go, that's really the ultimate. I mean, if you can reduce the positivity rate down below 5%, that's a goal that we have. If you can reduce the number of cases even more, you know, what's your goal? You want to keep reducing them until you can get the vaccine that's in place. Originally, our goal was simply to reduce cases so that we could handle them in terms of hospitalizations. Well, we've learned a lot. The hospitals are doing a great job. We're managing it. And so that's really hopefully something that we've prepared for and not going to be a problem. So now it's just a matter of saving more lives, reducing the spread, because it diminishes the disruption of people's lives when you don't have to isolate, you don't have to quarantine. Let's avoid that. And that's why we will continue to emphasize more success, more social distancing.
So is there kind of a number or kind of an area that we're shooting for in terms of lifting the state of emergency? Or is it, let's wait till a vaccine before we actually lift that up?
Well, that's a good question, and probably now I understand it better, Jay. But, you know, we don't have very many restrictions in place right now. The biggest restriction is that we are at two-thirds capacity in restaurants, in some venues. So there's a limitation on capacity that we have, but we're all open. Now, when can you go to full capacity? I would say that we're not to the point that we're really thinking about it yet. I'm not cocky about this business. As I said, we could have a spike tomorrow. We know how uncertain some things are. So let's maintain our consistency over a longer period of time where we can look at lifting those final restrictions.
There's sort of another phase before we go, I guess, basically back to normal, or would that be, I guess, in essence, the next step? Or is there anything else to kind of lift?
I mean, America's almost moved beyond the phases, but we are technically in phase two. The bottom line is we all want to get back to a routine life where we don't have any restrictions on activities. And so we're not ready to say this is what it's going to take for us to move to lifting the final restrictions on the size capacities of restaurants. We're just not there yet. We've got to have more success. I know that the restriction everybody's probably interested in is when are you going to be able to take off the mask? And the answer is from day one when they instituted the map for our future, it said that through all the phases, through all of this, mask and social distancing will be the norm until we get a vaccine. And so that's something that will continue to be a part of the necessity of life. And I'm so proud of Arkansas, our young people, our adults that, you know, understand the need for it, adapt to it. And even though you can't see their smile, you know they have a smile on their face, and that's pretty special.
Governor, is there, especially with school starting today, is there some type of tipping point where you may have to think about, let's all go remote until we can control this? I know you can't predict how many people are going to catch COVID within school districts, but do you have some type of tipping point or alarming point where you're going to be in an office with like three people making decisions thinking, okay, we got to change this? Is there some type of tipping number?
Well, we really outlined that, and I'll ask Secretary Key if he wants to elaborate, but we outlined that last week where we had the low risk, moderate risk, and high risk, and we actually identified, I think it was 19 school districts, so we're in that category. They can open, but we have increased flexibility, and then as we get a number of cases, then that's the first thing we look at is what's it like in the community, and thank goodness our positivity rate is going down. So that's what we're going to look at as the criteria is where do you fall on the scale and is it how does that impact the school in terms of staffing, in terms of their own resources, and then we will determine, and it'll be a joint decision with the local school district and the state departments as to what action should be taken. Johnny, do you have anything else on that?
Yeah, thank you, Governor. So there's not one single indicator that we're looking at for a tipping point. The governor spoke to this very well. It's a number of factors, and they are different from district to district. I think we saw some evidence of that where a district, because of one very important part of their operations was affected, then that caused them to delay the beginning of their school year. But what we expect to see is very different than what we saw in the spring. What we saw in the spring was a decision to close to on-site instruction. We are going to work with districts to not have to close for on-site instruction, even if in a critical response, that means we're going back to what we did in the summer, which was limiting the number of students and staff in a room back to the limits of 10, the making sure that with that, those numbers, social distancing could take place, but so that the students that really needed that instruction, interventions, or therapies could actually access those on the school campus. So it's not like we, again, not like we did in the spring where there's a point where we say we have to go all remote. I'm hoping we don't ever have to go all remote in this school year.
Is there any question remotely?
Yes,
Governor. Good afternoon.
Governor.
It's Neil Gladner in Hot Springs. And on the national news last night, there was a piece about questions to ask about school. And one of them had to do with, given the aerosol nature of the virus, what are the filters in schools? So I apologize if this question might have been answered 2 or 3 weeks ago when we started talking about schools. But is there a standard for the air filtration system in schools around the state? And what is that standard, if there is such a thing?
I'll take a whack at it. Do you have the answer to that? Go ahead, Johnny.
The recommendation now is for a HEPA filtration system. The challenge to that is that typical HVAC units in commercial facilities or education facilities are not designed to have HEPA filtration. There are some districts who have been able to adjust their systems or add filtration, but others have not. But that's something that districts are looking at, and we, through our Division of Public School Facilities and Transportation, are providing assistance to those those districts as they look for their options.
It's, just a follow-up, Secretary, is that just a function of the age of some of those systems?
Well, it's even more than that. I mean, you think about HEPA filtration, that's something that is in a very controlled environment, even more so, I would say, and Dr. Merrow could probably speak more to the types of filtrations used in medical facilities, but it's not your typical filtration system that you would use in your home or that you would use in a standard commercial or educational facility. There are add-ons that can be put into these systems, but again, it has to be spec'd out with the details of the engineering that goes into it. So it's not something you can just plug in or install and within an older facility.
Let's do it this way. Let's see if there's a call from Northwest or a question from Northwest Arkansas.
Yes, there is, Governor. This is Susanna with Ozarks at Large. I'm just wondering if you'd be able to either you or Dr. Romero would be able to discuss the massive data correction that took place in Washington and Benton County that added the 20,000 test results to Washington County, and I think Benton County dropped by about 8,000 tests.
Let me start with that. Dr. Romero and I have discussed this a number of times, and we're waiting for the right opportunity to make sure the system has been corrected. But in Washington County, there was one test laboratory that was sending in the positive test results but was not sending in the negative test result. And so that made, that was a very large number of additional negative tests then that we became aware of that obviously impacted Washington County's positivity rate. I was first made aware of this by Representative Nicole Clowney, who raised the question as to why there's a discrepancy in what they know is being tested and what we're showing. I think this is a part of that explanation. And that would impact also, I think, to some extent, Benton County as well, because the same lab would have been used. But Dr. Romero, do you want to clarify any of that?
So there are two data corrections, one which I explained previously, which comes from our repository, and we talked about how we had one way of entering the data and the other way of extracting the data, and that led to a large correction. There's a second large tranche of information that was sent to us. While the positives were clearly elucidated, the line that indicated the negatives was not spelled out, and I don't have all the data on that yet, but we didn't have the data for all the negatives. As the governor pointed out, There was discrepancies early on describing the number of tests that were performed in the Northwest and the number that we had. We think we have the answer to where this discrepancy is. It is not a problem with regard to positivity. We are not missing any positive cases, and I think that's very important to stress to the public. It is simply adding more negatives to the roll. So I can get into more details if necessary, but the data was being sent to us. It just wasn't in the form that we could extract it well.
Included in the overall numbers as of yet?
So this is the second tranche, right? The first tranche we've talked about already. The second tranche, we're waiting for the data to be cleared up. We have to get the same issues that we talked about before. So we want to make sure there's no duplicates. We're going to try to get rid of all out-of-state that might be in there. I don't know what's in there. I need to wait for our analysts and epidemiologists to give us the final number. But there will be a substantial number of cases added to the rolls. They will not impact the positivity rates. Okay? These are primarily negative cases.
Well, it won't impact the positive cases, right. On the positivity rate.
The governor spoke more clearly than I did. He's correct. That's why he's a lawyer and I'm a doctor. But but what he's saying is correct. It may impact the positivity rate, but in the right direction. So after you.
Is there any other question from Northwest? Is there a question from South Arkansas? Is there a question from Central Arkansas?
Yes, this is Melissa Zigowitz with THV11. While we had 2 days with less than 400 cases now, our hospitalizations are still up. Considering we just opened up schools today, will our hospitals be ready in the coming weeks if we start seeing outbreaks inside of schools?
Well, it's a very good question, and of course today our hospitalizations went down 34, so it was a very dramatic drop today, and down to 466, with our high point in hospitalizations, I believe, was 515 in that area. And so we're in good position right now as we start school, and if we continue to see our cases go down, then that relieves some pressure as well. And so it's always something to watch, but right now we're in a favorable position there. Is there any other question?
Yeah, Governor, this is Andrew with AP. Wanted to follow up with you. You talked last week about the White House Coronavirus Task Force and that you were expecting within the next report for Arkansas to no longer be listed as a red zone. Have you gotten the latest report? What has it said? And also, Oklahoma's governor has just gone ahead and posted all of the White House task force reports they've gotten, just listed them all online. Is that something do you plan on releasing all of the reports Arkansas has received?
In terms of the White House reports, they generally issue them on Monday, and last week we got them late in the afternoon. I've not received it from the White House yet, so we're anxious to receive that, of course. In terms of releasing those, it's my understanding the White House was releasing those, so I thought they were readily available. I don't know that we will be putting them online, but they're certainly available as needed, either from the White House or from us. Any other questions?
I guess, and just forgive me because I have been here in a bit here, but are testing turnaround times, what are we seeing with that? Because it's like, are the numbers, because I know we have to go back and adjust positivity rates, how recent is some of the day's information?
I just received anecdotally today that someone got their test turned around within an hour. Now, I'm curious as to where exactly they went and whether that was a point of care test or a VCR or a PCR test. but in terms of the turnaround time, it's getting better. I do know that from the commercial labs was the biggest problem. And the Department of Health, I believe that's within 2 days, 48 hours. And the commercial labs was... probably in the 3 to 4 day range, and we're hopeful that will get better. Dr. Romero, did you have anything else on that?
No, thanks.
All right.
And I guess that we could more antigen testing number updates now that school's in session. I know that was something you wanted to try to do for schools, but I know the federal government has kind of backed off on production of some of that supplies.
We're still looking at, we do have that capacity, and the antigen testing that we have is out in our public health laboratories, our county health offices, and that's available. And so if you see a need for a test, you go to the county health offices, it should be a quick turnaround, either through an antigen test or through a PCR test that will have, you know, within a very short amount of time, and we're putting a priority on the school testing. And so we're continuing to develop that capacity, but that should be a good supplemental tool that we use and want to make that more available. Thank you all very much.